Well, what now?
It's supposed to be a sad song, for crying out loud. You're doing your usual jag time thing. Cut it out. Dose me again, Dr. Jingles?
With pleasure, madam.
Stop it! Stop! Oh, for the love of Pete. It's a sad song, but it ain't a goddamn funeral dirge.
I don't know the dang tune, May. You just hummed it for me the one time, and I haven't yet got my ears around how it's supposed to go.
Have you ever figured out how to read a note of music, you could play it like it's rote. I showed you the damn broadsheet.
It didn't appear to be in a key I like.
Oh, it's only the most popular song of 1900.
Things take a little longer to reach the Klondike. What's it about, anyways?
I know you didn't read music. You can't read words, neither.
You don't have to go and hurt a fella's feelings.
Well, it's about a good girl who started out all right, but then fell into the life. Or married an old man, or something like that.
The life.
Yeah, the life.
Like your life?
Not my life. The girl in the song's a loser. I might be a lot of things, kid, but I ain't no loser. I ain't never been a loser.
Tell you what. Why don't you just get up there on stage and sing it however the Sam Hill you want to? And I'll pick it up and pitch in with whatever.
Learn the damn song first. You accompany me, not the other way around. Got it? No! No, 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 no!
I need a smoke.
Guessing that when he talks about smoke, he ain't talking about tobacco, is he?
That scrawny wisp of a personage, Yclept the Evaporated Kid, like many of his brotherhood, is what is commonly called a viper.
A viper?
In vulgar part.
I know what a damn viper is, Dr. Jingles.
Ah, to be sure.
It's a darn good song, you know?
I have no doubt of it. And I am confident you will more than do it justice.
Popular in all the finest establishments in Broadway, New York City, New York, so they say.
And you will make it so in the Palace Grand, Dawson City, the Yukon Territories, I have no doubt.
Well, your lips to the devil's ears. Trade has fallen off of late. We need to modernize. Popular music can't hurt. Well, say, that last drink ran a little shallow. Dose me again, will ya?
With abject apologies and the greatest possible dispatch, madam. Stat! Voila.
Oh, yeah, that's the stuff. Mmm. So, tell me. They're here?
Yes, madam. Arrived an hour ago.
You saw them?
I did.
Would you say they was traveling in style?
I saw only their outer apparel. I should say they were dressed appropriately for the season.
Meaning?
Meaning it's 20 degrees below zero outdoors. I observed a good deal of fur and wool.
Was she as beautiful as they say?
Not compared to the present company, Madam May. She was short and dark.
Oh, lay off it, Dr. Jingles. I'm a 6-foot ginger redhead. I could have been in a circus show with a red nose and big shoes, dancing with a bear.
I protest. You are the toast of the North, the star of the Palace Grand, the belle of the Klondike.
Oh, well, thanks, I guess. And I suppose that's what Charlie pays you for, to cough up bull pucky like that. But tell me true. She's a looker, ain't she?
She is comely, madam. Hark, it's the very lady. She descends.
Afternoon, barkeep.
Good afternoon to you, Madam Earp.
Hello, missus.
Howdy.
Madam Josephine Earp.
Josephine Marcus. My so-called husband has yet to make an honest woman of me. And besides, his surname sounds like a drunkard bringing up a belch. When the Earp brothers rolled into Tombstone, we were all going around burping at each other and laughing. But the Earp brothers shut us all up soon enough.
Madam Josephine Marcus, may I present Mrs. May McCamish Melbourne Meadows?
I'm right proud to meet you, ma'am.
May McCamish, how'd it go?
May McCamish Melbourne Meadows.
That's a whole lot of M's, sister.
Well, and it seems they just keep piling on. That is the hazard of taking on a man's name, especially if you tend to run through them as quick as I have.
Oh. All right, then. May McCamish Melbourne Meadows. Hello.
What's your poison?
Well, I'm Ricky, if the ingredients are available.
As is our wont in these benighted latitudes, we strive to attain authenticity when it is possible and improvise where it is not.
Well, staves off the scurvy, so they say.
A lot of that going around up here. You'll want to have Dr. Jingles set you up with some limes to take to Nome. The further away from civilization you get, the harder they are to come by.
What makes you think we're going to Nome?
Miss Marcus, there ain't no secrets in the Klondike.
Call me Josephine, or Josie, or even Joe, if you prefer that.
Joe, there ain't no secrets in the Klondike.
So everyone knows Wyatt and I are going to Nome.
Yep. And that you already looked into Wrangell and Juno and Skagway and Whitehorse and here, and you learned that the good claims are gone and the latest strike is more than 1,000 miles to the west. Nome, Alaska.
Voila, madam.
Thank you, innkeeper.
An honor and a pleasure, madam. Drink it in health.
Well, here's mud in your eye, May.
Confusion to our enemies, Joe.
How did they come to call the place Nome, anyway?
Oh, no one knows for sure. The best story I heard is that there was some map maker running around Alaska putting proper names to things, but he didn't know what that cape out there was called, so he wrote name with a question mark, and whoever was printing up the map ignored the question mark and misread the O. Of course, the Eskimos had been living there for thousands of years and doubtless had a perfectly good name for the place already, but I guess it never occurred to the map maker to ask him what it was.
Well, they tell us you don't even have to tunnel for the gold out there, that it washes up on the beach in the sand and you just scoop it up.
Well, they're lying.
I kind of figured. But Wyatt and I don't aim to go mucking around in the dirt for it. We intend to follow the same plan as you and Mr. Meadows have done right here. Open a first-class saloon and sporting house.
Bingo! That's where you mine the gold, all right. You know, I'll tell you one good thing about February in the Klondike. We have no shortage of ice for our cocktails. Ain't that right, Dr. Jingles?
I select and pluck down only the finest and purest icicles, madam. Each a particular point of pride. Sharp point of pride. In almost all cases.
Flavored by wood smoke and bird leavings.
The more good things you can tell me about February in the Klondike, the happier I'll be.
Oh, you'll travel the frozen Yukon all the way out to St. Michael's? Across the Norton Sound to Nome?
1,400 miles of staring up the buttholes of 13 Malamutes.
Still, winter's the time to do it. If you was to float that river in the summer, the bugs would suck half the blood out of your body and drive what's left of you stark raving mad if you ain't come to that state already.
Too late. We are indeed already in that state, clearly, going to Nome, Alaska in February.
If you don't like huskies, there was a fella back in December who pedaled his bicycle from here to Nome. Rode it along the frozen Yukon. We called him the Wheel Man. Couldn't afford a dog team, but he bought a bicycle off some drummer who wanted to sell it before he cleared out for the winter.
He rode to Nome on a bicycle?
He did. He went through a Gwich'in village out in interior Alaska somewheres, and this old chief seen him and said, "This white man sits down and walks like hell."
I suppose he saved money on dog food.
Oh, that he did.
Went through a what village?
Gwich'in. They're one of the Athabascan Indian tribes.
So there are some forms of civilization along the way?
Oh, my lord, yes. Never away from it. Well, you leave here, you're in the land of the Trondek people, then you go through Gwich'in country, and then you find your Hun people round about the Alaska border. Then you've got various and sundry Athabascan tribes in the interior of Alaska until you finally get way out west, and then you find first your Yupik Eskimos, and then up on the Norton Sound, you got your Inupiaq Eskimos. And now a whole slew of horny white men with the gold fever. But I wouldn't call them civilized.
How did you come to be an expert on all that?
Well, to my thinking, it pays to know whose land you're squatting on. All these people been living here since the beginning of time, not bothering nobody and nobody bothering them on account of this place is so darn tough to live in. And back in the day, few white folk thought to live here. But the natives never bargain for what happens when we strike the yellow stuff in the ground.
Will any of these civilizations be good for a hot meal on the trip out there?
Yeah, Joe. They all will.
Just the same. Looking around the palace grand, it occurs to me maybe we could just stop right here. Or I could, anyway. The thought of that dog sled ride has me pretty cowed, if I hot meals or not.
Wouldn't be surprised if Charlie made you a good deal on it.
Would Charlie be part of that deal?
What?
Just pulling your leg, May.
Huh.
How long have you and Charlie been plying your trades up here?
From the very beginning. We come up on a steamer in 97, right out of the get-go. We had us a moving bar on the Chilkoot Trail.
What's a moving bar?
A tent with a plank and a cask of rot gut whiskey. We would move it up the trail to the summit a couple hundred vertical feet at a time. And we started out at 50 cents the shot, and that was about 200 feet above sea level. But every time we moved, the price went up. By the time we come to the scales, which is pretty near 3,500 feet, your shot would set you back $5.
$5?
Yes, ma'am. Oh, speaking of, Dr. Jingles, don't get too far away. We'll want refreshing soon.
I'm just stepping outside to harvest fresh icicles. Upon my imminent return, I shall lay the tools of my trade and my array of potables at your command.
Colorful fellow, isn't he?
Too damn colorful for Charlie's taste. But I think he adds a touch of class. He was a very well-respected doctor down south somewhere, a surgeon, I believe. He had a brisk practice here the first 2 years, but then the Mounties made a law that you had to be Canadian to practice medicine in the Yukon.
Well, the loss to modern medicine is a boon to the liquor industry.
He can mix beverages even better than tonics and elixirs, I reckon.
The doctor is in.
Oh, thank God you make house calls.
Amen. Anyways, back to my tale. All that summer, we lived in a damn tent. One night, a big chunk of glacier upstream of the river we was camped on broke off, and the water rose 6 feet all of a sudden, middle of the night. Washed away our tent, bar, provisions, everything. Well, not the profits, though. Charlie always managed to hang on to those somehow.
Were you nearly drowned? Huh.
Or worse. We heard that river coming down like a freight train, and we up and run for it. Of course, I was sleeping in my customary night attire, which is only what nature clad me in. We made it out alive, but the sun was still up. Pretty sure it was 1 a.m, but you know, midnight sun and all that. So all them horned up pilgrims got a pretty good look. And Charlie said afterwards that if he had a Kodak snap of me, he could have sold that for a lot more money than that rot gut of ours fetched.
Anyway, here you are, the Palace Grand. And it is pretty darn grand, I must say.
Well, Charlie built it out of 2 stern wheelers, the fanciest ones on the Yukon.
How did he acquire those?
Won them in a card game.
Holy cow, what was he holding?
A mess. Nothing. Threes and sevens, or I don't know what. Nobody can bluff like Arizona Charlie Meadows.
Well, you may have heard something about Wyatt and me, but I happen to know a little bit about Arizona Charlie Meadows.
Oh, really? Dr. Jingles, we are two Bedouins in the Sahara Desert, dry as camels.
Your oasis is at hand. I hasten to quench.
Is that Mr. Meadows himself in that poster over there?
In that poster, yes. And that poster. And that poster. And yes, by golly, that poster too.
A fine figure of a man.
Ain't he just?
You did say he comes with the Palace Grand, right?
You made that joke already, Mrs. Earp.
I told you, my name
is... I know. You made that joke already, Mrs. Marcus.
Who says it's a joke?
Uh-huh.
Are you telling me, with all these M's in your past, that you've never traded up?
Oh, well, I guess a girl always keeps a door in her mind open, if you put it like that. Just don't be getting no ideas about
it. Especially if she's the likes of you and me, poor wenches cast adrift in the world by our mamas, say, or by the papas we never knew.
Seems we might have us more in common than just our devastating good looks, Josephine.
We've got us a lot in common.
Also seems you know quite a lot about my Charlie.
This is a very impressive establishment.
Glad you approve.
Ladies, your prescriptions have been filled.
Oh, thank you, doctor.
My distinct pleasure, madam.
The Palace Grand.
The Palace Grand.
Arizona Charlie Meadows.
The fella in all these posters.
Indeed.
And my husband.
So you've implied.
What do you think you know about him?
Oh, just a little. Raised on a dust-blown cattle ranch in Diamond Valley, Arizona. Becomes a world champion rider, marksman, and all-around cowboy. While, as a young man, he's guiding some important secret mission of the United States Cavalry, Geronimo's Apaches attack the home ranch, killing Charlie's father and brother. Charlie goes on a one-man rampage in which he hunts down and exacts revenge on the guilty parties, every last one of them. It's a feat that he will later recreate in thrilling detail in Buffalo Bill's Wild West extravaganza with galloping hooves and blazing pistols. It is seen all across North America and performed to wild acclaim for the crowned heads of Europe and sultans of the mysterious East.
Well, Joe, that there's quite a
but
lot.
But he is let go because his routine depicting his dramatic revenge upon the Apaches is upstaging the performance of Bill Cody himself. Arizona Charlie Meadows reigns as the finest showman of the West, with his 6.5-foot frame, his long dark locks, his smoldering good looks, his black mustachios, and his startling limpid blue eyes. The finest showman of the West. And now a purveyor of first-class entertainments in the frozen north.
Wow!
I beg you not to contradict any of that. I can see the posters. I've read the press clippings.
Oh, you read the one where he was crowned king of the cowboys.
Oh, Phoenix Territorial Fair 1888. Beat out the notorious Tom Horn, performing feats of derring do on his gallant white steed, Snowstorm. Also later dubbed, slightly confusingly, the Prince of Pistoliers.
Oh, why confusingly?
I don't know. Can a guy be a king and a prince at the same time?
I take your point. Well, so looky here, Joe. If you can knock me out of the saddle, it would save you all the miles of looking at the Malamute's buttholes. Is that it? That's your plan?
Tell me he's really 6.5 feet tall?
You're really a piece of work, ain't you, Joe?
Well, is he?
Oh, yeah. That part is true. It would take a tall drink of water to want to hook up with a glumping giraffe like me.
And the long, dark locks.
Well, there I'm going to have to disappoint you. We contracted a bad case of crabs and nits whilst on the Chilkoot Trail. Had to cut them off.
The black mustachios?
Oh, still black, but with the helpful aid of shoe polish.
And the startling, limpid blue eyes.
Oh, they're bloodshot a lot these days. Kind of a patriotic red, white, and blue effect.
Oh. Well, poop. But listen, this is from the New York Times.
Oh, and you went and clipped it out?
You bet I did. See for yourself.
Okay.
And I quote, Arizona Charlie gallantly rode down and dispatched the wild Apaches one by one, tumbling each rider off his pony to lie slain in the dust, blown to Hades by the brave, vengeance-seeking pistolier.
So are you interested in hearing the real story?
Not at all, but I have a feeling you're going to tell it to me anyway.
Well, first off, it wasn't Geronimo's Apaches killed Charlie's daddy and brother. They was a renegade bunch of cattle rustlers who come down from hole in the wall and was stealing anything with hooves. Daddy and Big Brother made the mistake of objecting to that.
But afterwards, Charlie hunted them down and blew them all to smithereens.
Nope. They got clean away, cattle, horses, and all.
Oh, but in the Wild West show...
Oh, yeah, well, sure. Charlie's version, you might say. Him galloping around and shooting blanks and painted up folks screaming and falling off their ponies. You know, we had us some real Indians in the show, you know. Sitting Bull himself was one of the stars. His Sioux warriors was the finest bareback riders I ever saw. General Sherman said those guys was the best light cavalry in all the world.
So the Indians in the Wild West show took the part of the Apaches?
Oh, my hell no! They had too much dignity to participate in that foolishness. Said they as a people had been blamed for way too much white man hijinks to even pretend to do something they never done.
So who played the Indians?
We did. The white riders, us, which had no shame at all. You know, they made us paint ourselves red because for some reason that's what the audiences was expecting. You know, red skin.
You took the part as an Apache warrior, May?
I surely did. My breech cloth and red-painted legs never failed to get me a lot of attention from the guys. You know, one time in Paris at the Champs-de-Mars, I died so spectacularly, I wasn't paying no attention to where I fell off, and I fetched up kerplop in a fresh buffalo pie. Had to lay there for 15 minutes before Charlie had polished off the last of us and gone on to his encore.
His encore, quoting again, but lest his audience think that Arizona Charlie Meadows could only do damage with blanks, he went on to a feat that garnered wild enthusiasm from all the spectators. As an assistant flung china plates aloft, Charlie fast drew his pistols and, blazing away, shattered each one with a single shot from his smoking Colt revolvers. So now?
Well, what you do in a situation like that, Joe, is you take and load your 45 shells with birdshot.
Birdshot?
That's right. So you really can't miss, can you?
Are you telling me that your husband, Mr. Arizona Charlie Meadows, is not the Prince of Pistoliers?
The very next year after he was crowned King of the Cowboys, Tom Horn come back from Wyoming and knocked him right out of that title.
Ladies, forbear. I could not help it over here, but must say, in my employer's defense, he demonstrates his pistoliering prowess from that very stage every night of the world.
Oh, so tell her about our little act, Dr. Jingles. I can see you're dying to.
Oh, it's a wonderful thing, Madam Marcus. Madam May does up her hair with little glass balls woven into her coiffure. Maybe a dozen of them.
Yeah, made me look sort of like a red-flocked Christmas tree.
And Captain Meadows stands way back there at the back of the house, and he draws his revolvers and shoots each of the glass ornaments one by one until they're all shattered, the bullets coming terrifyingly close to Madam May's person.
Now kind of looking like a red-flocked Christmas tree after the eggnog party.
He holsters his weapons and turns to go, and Madam May, with a wink and a nod at the audience, reaches into the luxurious forest of her hair and produces one more glass ball, one that had escaped the marksman's notice. She holds it up betwixt thumb and forefinger, and before the audience even has an opportunity to applaud, Mr. Meadows whips around, draws a pistol, and shoots that one too, right out of her hand. It brings the house down. Every single time.
I would think so. It sounds thrilling.
Yeah. Well, looky right here, Josie.
Dear Lord.
You see it?
You're missing the tip of your thumb.
Prince of the Pistoliers, my fanny. Son of a bitch bastard. Hack!
Do you still do that act?
What the hell do you think?
Well, look here. May McCamish, Melbourne Meadows.
That's me, Josephine. You think you can take me in a fair fight?
A fair fight? Oh, my sweet lord, no, I don't.
You after my man?
You didn't do a very good job of selling him.
Still, maybe we could consider a swap. Dr. Jingle! Refreshments for me and my lady friend.
Post haste, madam.
Because then again, Miss Josephine, my so-called husband ain't the actual for real famous one, is he?
So-called.
Oh, that thing you said before. You know, needing our men to make honest women of us.
But do we?
No, we do not. There are a lot of things I am and a lot of things I ain't, but one thing I am is honest.
Yes, I can see that. Well, there are different kinds of fame, aren't there?
There are at that. You can see by looking around this here theater, the old posters, the newspaper clippings, the trophies, the prize medals in their cases, that my Charlie done everything he could to cash in on his fame. I reckon your husband will do the same thing out there in Nome, won't he?
That was never his plan. He was hoping that way up here in the Klondike, maybe he could find people who'd never heard of the OK Corral or Ike Clanton or Johnny Ringo.
Huh. Well, how's that panning out for him?
About the way you'd suppose, to his dismay.
Well, confusion to our enemies. Mm-hmm.
Mud in your eye.
Jingles here's a pretty good mix master, ain't he?
That he is. Can I ask you something, May?
Shoot.
Is the Palace Grand a sporting house?
Nah, not really. A few of the higher class, better heeled ladies in town might take a room and manage some discreet and generous callers. A few years ago, I and Charlie had us a couple of prime knocking houses, which was kind of expected when the big rush was going on. Well, 300 men for every one female in those days. The money was good, but you always had trouble with the clap and the rivalries and the murders.
Murders?
Oh, yeah. You got your lady in the life. She may or may not have her a pimp or a macro or fancy man running her, or she may be what you might call an independent contractor. But whoever she is, she ain't never gonna fall in love with no John. But that don't mean one of them ain't gonna fall in love with her. But he gets drunk, and he gets jealous, thinking about what's going on in that bed of hers every single night of the world. And that makes him crazy. And so he goes to her crib one evening and decorates the wallpaper with her brains and his own right after that.
Jesus, Lord, that sounds like Tombstone.
Of course it sounds like Tombstone and Deadwood and Carson City. And it sounds like Juno, and Skagway, and White Horse, and right here in 97 and 98. But now the Klondike Rush is playing out. The good claims are all taken. We got the Mounties holding up the law here now. We got preachers and school marms. I and Charlie seen all that coming, and thought we'd try and make the Palace Grand a little more classy.
Classy.
But now, Gnome.
Gnome will be the gold rush now. 300 men to one woman?
Yep.
Wyatt wants our place to be a sporting house.
So you said.
He claims that's where the money is.
Oh, he ain't wrong.
No. No, I'm pretty sure he's right.
You said you didn't want to be down there mucking around in the sand, right?
That I did.
Well, then.
Well, then.
You didn't know Wyatt before the OK Corral?
No. Heard of him, of course. He was married at the time to a dope fiend. As for me, I had recently taken up with the town sheriff.
And let me guess, you traded up.
Sure. And his wifey didn't prove all that difficult to displace.
Say, Josephine.
Yes, May.
There's a photograph I seen, a right beautiful one. Folks say it's you, and now that I have laid eyes on you, I believe it is, for certain.
Oh, Lord, not that damn thing.
Oh, the light in it is glorious, soft and golden, with shadows like...
chiaroscuro.
I have no idea what that word was which come out of your head.
Never mind. Go on.
Well, anyways, your hair is all down, and there's this kind of drape thing over you hanging down open, showing you've got nothing on underneath. It's silk, maybe.
Gossamer.
Yeah, gossamer. Because you can
see right through it.
See right through it.
Good enough to get a gander at the twins, right?
Well, yeah. No, I think it's a beautiful picture. Like famous old-time art. You know the ones with the goddesses sort of falling out of their wraps?
Thank you, I guess. But I'm sort of sorry that thing got around so much.
But I guess what I was wondering...
Was I ever in the life?
Yeah.
I was a single woman when I first rolled into Tombstone, Arizona. I had no prospects, nobody back home. No husband or beau, no education, but what I'd picked up myself. Sure, I was in the life for a time.
Me too.
You too.
Me too.
Well, confusion to our enemies, then.
Mud in your eye.
I'll tell you a funny story about that picture. It was taken in Fly's photography studio, October 26, 1881. And what do you suppose was right next door to it?
I wouldn't know.
A third-rate livery stable and holding pen known as the OK Corral.
Oh.
And while Bucky Fly was posing me for that very portrait, a great commotion arose right outside. Angry men yelling, then... rifles, shots, shotgun blasts, pistols, and a man came crashing through the window right into the studio in a shower of broken glass, screaming, "Don't shoot! Don't shoot!" And right outside the studio, the Earp brothers and Doc Holliday blew that man's brother and the gang called the Cowboys all to pieces.
That man was Ike Clanton?
Yeah. He ran away, survived. But it didn't matter. Later on, one of Wyatt's guys ran him down and blasted him, too, while he was probably still screaming, "Don't shoot. Don't shoot.
Don't shoot."
But you probably heard all about that OK Corral shootout. Newspapers couldn't get enough of it, magazines, even a book. The Old West, as depicted in the dime novels published back east, weren't all that accurate. Fast draw, desperados, Indians on the warpath, all that. But here was an honest-to-God gunfight where men actually got shot and actually died. Exciting.
Oh, well, did those newspapers and magazines and book writers pay Wyatt for his story?
Hell no. Public domain news reportage. We remain as poor as church mice.
Well, then how do you expect to open a first-class saloon and sporting house?
If notoriety of Wyatt's kind doesn't exactly attract angels, Investors sometimes could do come forward.
Okay. So I've heard some of it. How the cowboys come after Holiday and the Earp brothers. How they shot Morgan Earp in the back while he was playing billiards, shot him through a window and run away, killed him dead.
Morgan was the sweetest one of them all. The one who deserved it least.
And how Wyatt and Doc Holiday went on a rampage, killing anyone they thought had anything to do with it. I guess they were marshals or sheriffs or something.
And sometimes they were. Sometimes they weren't. It didn't much matter to them.
Well, they gunned those men down anyway?
They gunned them down anyway.
I read how Wyatt come upon a whole party of them camped by a river, went at them with guns a-blazin' right out there in the open, no cover, and all of them shooting at him from behind rocks and trees, but somehow he gets them all and not a scratch on him.
Curly Bill Brocious, Indian Charlie Hughes, Johnny Barnes, Milt Hicks, Frank Stillwell, Johnny Ringo.
And is that true?
Gospel.
And they don't pay him nothing for his stories? No royalties or what have you?
No.
Well, besides the guys he shot, did he arrest lots of people? Run them in for a fair trial and all that?
No. If he was after somebody, whether he was in his lawman role or not, he always shot to kill. There was no wounding and bringing back alive. He liked a bullet to the head.
Oh, always got him right between the eyes.
And he wasn't all that particular. Eyes, ears, back of the skull, he didn't care.
He made a lot of enemies, I reckon.
Oh, hell yes. But he was the luckiest gunfighter ever born. He had no luck in any other area of his life. Not with faro or poker or drinking or, I have to say it, with women. But he somehow dodged all the bullets that were sent after him.
Well, it's too bad, you know. He must be a hell of a sharpshooter. Could have been crowned king of something or other. Could have put his face up on a poster, capitalized on it, so to speak.
Not really much of a sharpshooter, May. He favored a shotgun, mostly. Kind of like your Charlie and his birdshot china plates.
Oh, I see.
A close-up shotgun blast to the head is not a pretty sight.
No, I suppose it ain't.
I can tell from his sleeping. Sometimes he sees them in his dreams.
Sees what?
Shotgunned heads.
Do you reckon, Josephine, that there's a big difference between a man who has killed people in real life and one who has pretended to have, but never actually done it?
I'm guessing you know the answer to that, Mrs. Meadows.
Oh, here we are, Joe, talking about each other's man. But I would be dishonest if I didn't say that before you showed up, I was actually more wondering who you turned out to be.
Really?
Really.
And what do you think?
I think you're more interesting than either of them.
Either of who?
Oh, those men.
Well, I don't mind saying, May.
Yeah?
So are you.
Excuse me, ladies. I see you've gone dry. May I?
Oh, we're done, Jingles. Plenty lubricated.
I do beg your pardon, of course.
Oh, Joe, is your room to your liking?
Oh, it's a dandy. Better than I deserve. Wyatt liked it, too. Went straight off to find your husband for a chat.
You reckon they found much to talk about?
I don't know, truly. They both lived in Arizona. They have that in common. Cactuses, mesas, what have you.
Yeah, Arizona.
And now Alaska, or the Yukon, or wherever the hell we are.
Wherever the hell we are now.
Maybe we should go find them before they blab all our secrets to each other. See about dinner?
I and Charlie would be honored to have you as guests. Joe Perdue's restaurant, best grub in Dawson. I'll walk up to the room with you, shall I?
Onward!
Oh, Dr. Jingles, hold down the fort. The trade will be straggling in soon enough.
I stand steadfast at my post, Madam May.
If... If we lock arms, Joe, maybe we can keep each other from tipping over. I think we put away a lot of fire water. Or anyway, you did.
Oh, go to hell, Mrs. Meadows.
After you, Mrs. Earp.
Psst! Jingles! She gone?
Madame May has taken her guest and gone forth.
Phew. I thought she was like to rip me a new one.
She is exacting, evaporated kid. She is a celebrated entertainer of some note.
Can I get a whiskey?
Absolutely not. Your present tab far exceeds anything you may hope to make with your shocking abuse of that piano. Unless you can learn to shine on Madame May's new number. Then I might say a word to the manager on your behalf.
All right, I'll get right after it. Say, did you see him?
To whom are you referring?
Whom? Wyatt Earp, that's whom! The famous gunslinger?
Yes. Yes, as a matter of fact, I did. I had the honor to serve him a whiskey before he'd even taken his coat off.
What was he like? Fearsome? Cold-eyed and ruthless?
No, that wasn't it at all. He looked more tired and old. The tired old man who has come to the Northland looking for something. I'm not entirely sure what.
Well, that's sort of disappointing, ain't it? Yet another big fat letdown.
Perhaps. Or perhaps it is in some way instructive.
Instructive?
That's right.
Huh. Well, that song ain't gonna learn itself, is it?
No, they never seem to, do they?
She's only a bird in a gilded cage, a beautiful sight to see. You may think she's happy and free from care. She's not, though she seems to be. 'Tis sad when you think of her wasted life, for youth cannot mate with age. And her beauty was sold for an old man's gold. She's a bird in a gilded cage.